But it is the second half of the show when we do get into business unusual. Today, our topic is called fixing tech. And certainly, you know, the assumption has always been that technology itself is aimed at providing products, you know, to fix most problems. And for the last decade or so, and probably even more, that has been the case, particularly for things like communication, medicine, retail, and even agriculture and the like, you know. But however, there is a downside, you know, there's nothing then certainly that you can fix yourself. I still drive around a 2001 Mazda 323. I call him Roy. Certainly one of the best things around, and anybody can fix Roy. But if I was to get one of the new and fancy and latest things, I certainly couldn't get a mechanic just around the corner to certainly fix my car. So that would be a bit of a worry. And we're going to get into business unusual now and chat to Colin Cullis, who's business unusual correspondent at The Money Show. Colin, is this counterintuitive? Is this helping or not helping?
It's a bit of both, and you're very good to raise Roy. Bless you for riding Roy, because you know back in the day we used to kind of be able to fix the things that we own. But there are so many things we own now, and I would ask everybody just pause and think of the things you use, everyday things you use in any given day. So your car, TV, a phone, anything like that. How many of those could you fix right now? And I would be surprised if somebody could say, well, I can fix any of them. We don't even know how they work, let alone how to fix them.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, you know, the part in your intro there saying that we've used technology to fix problems we have. You know, it was hard to get in contact with somebody. And if you had to learn or build yourself a walkie-talkie and then know how all those things, that's kind of tough. And a mobile phone just made that easy. But it's also made us impossible to be able to do anything else with it if something went wrong. And you know, there's a very legitimate call for us to sort of reduce and reuse and recycle. But I wonder if that fourth one isn't missing, and that's repair. And for some reason, we just don't seem to be getting too worked up about repairing things. We're very happy that when we've used something for a little while, we just get rid of it. And I saw today the new iPhones will be coming out a little later in the year, as they do every year.
Yeah.
And you know, if you've only just got your head around whether or not you're planning on getting the new iPhone 10, you've already got the new one coming out. And you know, they're not cheap. Because they're amazing. They are very, very powerful devices. You certainly don't have to replace them every year because, you know, somehow from one year to the next, there's so much more that they do. They make incremental sort of improvements. And that's why I thought it was worthwhile raising, because while, you know, we want to try and reduce the amount of waste, and e-waste is certainly becoming more of an issue, it's not going to change unless consumers and, I suppose, business start realizing that this game that we've been playing has been very, very useful, has been fantastic. But I just can't see it being sustainable. So I thought I'd kick off with a little bit of a history, because you always kind of imagine, well, when did this all go pear-shaped, and we kind of think everything has happened in the last 10 years. But to be fair, the problem is kind of almost around World War II.
So, 1950s odd, somewhere there.
Well, it really became problematic in the 50s. But if you think about World War II, particularly in the US, they got this massive manufacturing sort of capacity that they built up for producing armaments for the war. But, you know, the US wasn't attacked. So at the end of the war, all of it was still there. And you don't have a need for building weapons. So they switched to making civilian things, cars and appliances. Mm-hmm. And some very large appliance makers, General Electric and the rest of them, switched to make sure that everybody would have a fridge. Everybody would have sort of all these modern appliances that you'd want to stick in a home, and people loved it, so they bought one, and that was great. And then the appliance makers were like, well, now we need to sell more fridges, but who's going to buy them? So they came up with this idea, not necessarily them, the entire industry sort of said, well, what if we made it so that a new fridge looked better, and you'd want to not have an old one? And the term that was coined at the time was planned obsolescence. Make something obsolete by design. And there were two ways they did this. One, a newer version looks better. And if you think about how cars every year come out with sort of a facelift, you can tell, that's the 2018 model versus the 2007. Or you're looking at, was it 2003, Mazda, you said?
2001.
Now, the number of
2001.
Yeah, the engine is probably still quite similar. The chassis and how it all connects on that Mazda is probably quite similar to the ones you'll get right now. But the styling and all the rest of it, that's changed quite a bit. So that was the one element, design. The other one is they would build certain parts that you couldn't replace, but they were very significant. So that if it broke, you either had to get rid of the entire machine, or the cost to replace that part was almost as much, if not more, than replacing. Now, if you think about a TV, and if you've ever had a TV fail, something on a screen or get a little something going wrong with it, and then you say, oh, no, I don't want to replace the whole TV. You know, for the most part, it's fine. I just want to get that component, that little chip, that
one
whatever
thing.
And they're like, sure, we can sort it out for you. It's going to take you weeks to get it repaired, but you can do that, and it's probably going to cost you as much as a new TV. In which case, you say, no worry, throw it away. I'll get a new TV. Because, of course, TV manufacturers don't want to sell components. They want to sell TVs. That's the kind of game that they're in.
Yeah, and so it's the long game as well that they sort of need to play for themselves. And in a sense, sustainability is keep manufacturing as opposed to keep fixing, which doesn't bring in as much income, right?
Exactly right. And it's the business model that they've adopted because that one, for the margins and for the capacity, made sense. But it doesn't have to be that way. And I think we're starting to enter the period now where hopefully some of those industries are starting to relook at what they can do. And I got a couple of suggestions about how they could do it. But perhaps as a way of illustrating why it is so hard for industry to change, and again, as consumers, we shouldn't just say, "Oh, well, business has been bad for doing this." But there's a great sort of comparison that I'd make between when electricity became available to replace steam. So, you know, you got all these beautiful steam-powered factories that were doing great work, enormous, clever engineering going into making a steam-powered factory. And then somebody says, no worries, you can use electricity. And so somebody changes some of the parts of the factory to make it electrical, i.e. the machines turn on and off when you want them rather than everything running off this massive drive. Yeah. And it didn't work. It was expensive to switch it across, and it wasn't half as efficient because, of course, steam-driven factories had been refined and improved over years and years and years. Along comes a new electric kind of version, and maybe the machine burnt out or wasn't that reliable. So people are like, oh, I don't really want this. But when new factories were built and somebody made the call to say, well, let's go all electric right from the beginning, then they realized, ah, now this does make sense. Now you're really getting the advantage for the production that switched to, you know, you don't have to have a big boiler boiling water all day, all night to ensure that the factory can run. You can just turn machines on and off as you want. You can replace machines. It becomes very good that way. So taking that as an example, here's some ways that we can perhaps doing it. Looking at cars, where typically we've wanted to buy a car because that was our car, you know, that's what we owned. And the move towards autonomous driving might see manufacturers say, well, we don't want to try and sell cars anymore. We want to sell bookings in cars. And Mercedes says they're looking to create their own sort of Uber-type service where you book a Mercedes from Mercedes and it simply drives around to wherever you want to go. And there might be a version that says they'll have an actual driver initially, and then at some point they'll say, well, we'll get rid of the driver, and then you just hail a Mercedes. And then there's a very good reason for them to say, oh, I don't want to keep replacing Mercedeses every year because they are now buying those cars. So they're going to make sure that those Mercedes last a very long time and only upgraded when there's a significant sort of material benefit for them for, you know, reliability or safety or some other thing. So that'll be a good one. And again, it also means that let's say on one day you're keen for sort of treating yourself, well, you could effectively book yourself a trip in a sports car and get driven to work in a beautiful sports car. And then for the rest of the week or end of the month, you say, I'll just take a regular old Mazda 2001. That'll do me. And you get backwards and forwards that way. So that's the one element.
Yeah.
The other element, particularly with companies like a Samsung and an Apple, where they don't just make one product anymore. They, you know, your whole home is filled with a Samsung this or an Apple that. For them to actually say, well, we won't sell you devices. We'll sell you the home kit. So you'll get the laptop. Oh, you'll get the TV. You'll get all of it. But you don't own it. You just rent it.
Yeah.
And it's on a lease basis. And then when a new one comes out, they'll say, well, we'll replace that one for this one. And when the new phone comes out, they'll give you that one. But then they'll know they won't have to try and sell you a phone every year. They'll know that your phone can last 3 years and that ultimately you can take it back to have a battery replaced or a screen replaced should you need it.
Yeah.
And you just say, hey.
As you do right now.
Kind of as you do right now, but then the incentive for them isn't to have you want to buy new products and then begrudgingly have to fix it if you must, but rather to say, no, we want to keep you very happy with the user experience of all of our products, and we want to give you the best products, but we know our products are now, you know, they're so good, they're so reliable, they're so long lasting, that changing them every year just doesn't make sense. It's a bit, you know, like a car. You buy the car and you think, oh, I better be careful with my service warranty, my service plan and my warranty, and better make sure it lasts very long. You know, cars these days, they hardly need those services. They go for kilometers and kilometers and kilometers with absolutely no worries. And on the occasions, I suppose, where you do need to have something updated, and this is still part of the problem. In fact, there's a couple of documentary pieces that Motherboard did looking at agriculture. And so, you know, farmers these days are very high-tech, far more high-tech possibly than some of us in the cities, because those tractors and things, they got all GPS navigation and everything else on it. And obviously they're sold by these very big farm equipment manufacturers. And if you know what happens now, if your car doesn't work and you have to take it into the dealer and they plug in a computer and the computer diagnoses everything, well, you imagine with a big combine harvester or something that's worth millions and millions, you really have to pay to have something fixed. And ultimately, while you know, while you don't have the sensors, while you don't have the computer to plug in, you can't get the machine working. Not like an old one, like, you know, good old Roy there. You'll just open up the bonnet, bash a couple of things together, and you'll be back up and running. So that's kind of the element that I want to try and raise. And there was a line that there's a crowd called the iFixit sort of community. And these are the old tinkerers and engineers who kind of figured, or who said,
partly me as well.
Yes, and we, hat tip to you for just wanting to understand a little bit more. But they said if you can't fix it, you don't own it. And that's maybe a good sentiment for people to remember about how we use consumer products and everything else. And if we do have a commitment for you know, good environmental protection and being good consumers, then perhaps we do need to start changing our thinking about how we approach these products. And hopefully those companies, too, will start doing something a little unusual and coming up with something other than just selling us a new thing every year.
Is technology making history obsolete? That's probably the question we'll probably try to answer with that one. Colin Cullis, thank you so much for your time. Business Unusual correspondent at The Money Show.